New Zealander Mandy Foley came to Australia with just $600 in her pocket. She wanted to explore the wider world, try her luck at fame and fortune. Well, just fortune, really. She didn't get very far. She fell in love with Sydney and immediately got to work as a waitress. In the nearly 40 years since, Mandy Foley has created and built a business empire, helping other waiters, kitchen staff, servers, and more recently a concierge team, find employment. You may not know her business by name, but Stedman's Hospitality Services has supplied top-notch staff to all the A-list shindigs, parties, galas, openings, dinners and boardroom events since the mid-1980s, including at the Sydney Olympics, the famed Children's Hospital Gold Dinners and plenty more. Mandy is more your cool-headed, behind-the-scenes supremo of organisation and logistics. She says her company offers its workers structure, training and a family environment. And while there have been plenty of ups along the way, Mandy has had more than her fair share of downs in her startup journey. But Mandy Foley has not only survived, she's thrived. Hope you enjoy Mandy Foley. Mandy Foley, founder and managing director of Stedman's Hospitality Services. Welcome to Build It, They'll Come. Thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here, Helen.
Now, you are always at all the A-list events, the best parties in town, lots of big corporate events and lots of big sort of statewide events, country events. What is it that Stedman's do?
That's a very good question because we do a lot more than people realise. So when I started the business back in 1986, we did predominantly corporate boardrooms and private homes, and we provided training and waiters to all of those areas of the marketplace. And then as the business grew, we grew into the event world, which started to sort of come alive in the 80s and 90s particularly. And so we really gained a great reputation of being experts in that big event area, which then took us on to sporting stadiums, large, you know, like when we used to have the entertainment or the entertainment centre, the convention centres. We do staff for all of those areas of the marketplace. And then corporate concierge started to kick in with all the corporate boardrooms. And then from there I took it into the residential concierge.
So I kind of what does that mean? I mean, we all know what a concierge is. We see them at a hotel or maybe at a nice apartment block. What does it mean from your business point of view?
Well, residential concierge, so some of the buildings that they're building around town have, like they in New York, if you think to New York, yeah, and all those sorts of things, we now start to have that in Sydney. Not, it's starting to develop quite nicely now. So there's a 24-hour desk where there's a concierge that sits there that greets guests, helps tradesmen come in to look at apartments, mm-hmm, you know, to do servicing, gathers all the endless parcels.
Oh, which have become enormous in number, I imagine, in recent years.
Yeah.
So whereas perhaps once upon a time buildings might hire those people, you now provide it as sort of outsourced for various buildings, well, residential or corporate.
That's right. So the thing with hiring staff is it's really is quite a minefield, and there are ever-changing employment laws. And everything needs to be compliant. And so I guess that's what we do in the marketplace. That's the one, my big mantra in life is always to be compliant.
Right. So you pay all your superannuation, you pay all the right rates, and I imagine you come under lots of different award rates as well as salaries.
Well, what we do is we actually, we pair ourselves to one award, which is the Hospitality General Award, and all work that we do, we go through there because some of our staff will work across different areas of our workplace. And what happens is if you start moving staff between awards, if you don't move them into the highest paid, if that's where the majority of their work is, you actually then can be, you're actually underpaying them.
Right,
so it's better to hectic with one award, and then you know exactly what you're doing. And the Higer Award or Higer Award is the fairest award for all the hospitality workers, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've got straight down into nitty-gritty way too early in the interview. But Stedman's began in Sydney, and that's where your home base is. Yeah. You became established then in Melbourne, and you've since expanded your geographic jurisdiction, I guess, to Brisbane and the Gold Coast. That expansion, how long has that been going on?
That's only a year.
Okay. So how's that going?
It's interesting. What I say to everybody is, and the thing that I've really learned is that Queensland, Victoria, and New South Wales are three different countries.
Really?
Absolutely. And they all have little different idiosyncrasies, and the culture's different.
In terms of the way we all entertain, either at a corporate level, a state level, or a private level?
Completely. And, you know, that, I guess, truthfully did kind of surprise me. But it's an interesting thing to get inside it. But if you think about it, you know, a lot of people actually go to Queensland for a much more relaxed style of life.
Yeah,
And I think that's lovely.
And they don't want to dress up necessarily.
No. And they don't want to sit down to a stuffy dinner.
Right.
They love a cocktail party.
Okay.
And they like a glass of probably Sauvignon Blanc or rosé. You know, like this.
Oh, so you get down to that level of knowing exactly what they want.
Yeah.
And then what would New South Wales people want?
Well, that would be more your Chardonnay and a dinner.
Yes.
They like a party. But, you know, it's more along those sorts of lines.
Yeah.
And definitely much more dressed.
Right. And then Victoria or Melbourne?
I think that Victoria has had a tough time through COVID.
Yeah.
And it's a tricky city at the moment. Beautiful people inside of there. But I think, truthfully, that they've done it the toughest of all of us.
They'll come out of it, though. I mean,
I think so. Absolutely.
They also love an event, and they're very good at events.
No,
in
they
Victoria.
Are. You know, some of the best things I see are, you know, like great friend Bruce Keeble from the Big Group. He is like the party maestro. But I just think that it's been really tough for the people there. So they, you know, it's taken them longer to emerge. But they love a party.
Yeah,
and they're very committed to philanthropy. They, you know, they have a whole different mindset down there. It's very establishment, but tough on the kids down there. I think that's probably what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
They've had a tough time of it.
Yeah.
Where Queensland didn't get locked down at all, so there's sort of no residue from that. Sydney, you know, well, we just keep going anyway.
In and out of lockdown.
Yeah.
You've also, you mentioned it before, you've expanded the services you offer into concierge. Yeah. So why did that come about? Is it just always looking for ways to grow the business, or did you see a real need to concierges needed to be on tap?
Well, it was something that I did notice. It was a number of years ago, and I because we started to do a lot more corporate concierge, it seemed to be that started to grow quite a lot. You know,
right.
There wasn't really those big desks in the corporate offices, then all of a sudden that started to become much more important, and that presence in the boardrooms grew. Now, don't forget, I go back to 1986, there was a tea lady with a trolley. So, no, what has happened over those years is massive.
Oh, massive. And, in fact, I was going to sort of ask you about the kinds of events would have changed. But so when you – I take you back to that time when you sort of thought, I can do this, or I'm going to do this. It was a time of explosion of probably money, corporate money, the 80s. We saw a lot of growth in Australia and into the 90s, apart from a recession in 91. Yeah. But was that the real impetus? Had you been, you know, doing the waitress job like many young Australians do in their sort of teens or early 20s?
Well, I came here from New Zealand and arrived in 1983 with a suitcase, $600, and a kind of a dream to get on in life.
You know? Really?
And I was actually
$600.
Yep, $600 in a suitcase. I think that's why I love employing young people so much. I remember those times.
Mm.
And you've got nothing to lose. You've kind of, the world's your oyster. And I was actually heading back to live in London, and I fell in love with Sydney. Two children I have here now. So, this is my home.
Yes.
I'm an Australian.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with Sydney, and I decided I really wanted to make a go of it. And so I was working for another, you know, there was agencies in Sydney.
Right.
And I was working for an agency and...
As a sort of a temporary wait staff
going
server,
here and there.
Yeah.
And I kind of, you'd go from, you know, you'd be at the Premier's department one day in a boardroom the next, and then they send you to a cafe the next. And the thing that struck me was that we were responsible for getting our own pay. So, you know, you go to a boardroom and, the girl at the desk, the receptionist would open up the petty cash tin and give you your cash, or
half the people listening to this wouldn't even know what the petty cash tin is.
Mandy. I know, but that's how it was.
Yeah.
And then
so meaning the wait staff would have to sort of say, oh, can you pay me my money now?
Exactly.
And it would come out of a little locked box that had cash when we used to use cash all the time.
Exactly.
So it wasn't even sitting in an envelope waiting for them. They had to sort of almost count it out.
Every now and then it would be. But then you'd also then go into a restaurant or to a cafe, and sometimes they wouldn't pay you on the spot and you'd have to go back to get your money.
Oh.
And I really felt that was not the right way to employ people. I think that's what struck me. Mm. And, you know, and the agencies would send you out and they would get a placement fee. And I just went, where's the workers' rights in this?
Yeah.
No, where's the care? Where's the love? Where's the sense of belonging? You know, where's the family? And I really, that's really how I started Steadman's. You know, it was one of those moments. I went, no, this needs to be sorted out. And of course, if there was no uniforms, there was no training. But it was very long ago now. And you know, that's how it was. And so you don't have to keep continuing doing that. You can change things. And I decided to do that. And I found myself in a situation where I was a single parent, and with a 6-month-old, and I went, well, it's now or never. And I just got on and started Steadman's, and I had two great partners, I thought, and they were Stephen and David, and that's where the name Steadman's came from, the three of us, Stephen, David and Mandy.
Okay.
And so then two men and myself, and we were very well regarded in, you know, what we did. We're very accomplished waiters. And
yes.
And
So wait a minute. So it was your idea and you brought in two friends, or were you all sitting around
we
having a drink one night?
And I said, come on, we need to get on and do this.
Yeah.
And so they went, oh, okay, that's great. But unfortunately, they didn't have the same work ethic as me. And so they unfortunately did depart. And
Was it acrimonious?
On.
Did you have to buy them out? Or
just
departed?
You know, it was very early
days. It was
still
so small then, and early days.
Yeah.
So you were a single mum in a new country, a few years into being in a new country, and you thought, I can do this better than the existing agencies.
I did. That was kind of what I did. I think necessity, though, having a young baby, you get very resourceful. And I just went, well, I'm going to make this work.
Yeah. The whole thing, though, about, and I'm interested and I ask a lot of my guests this, you know, what is it that makes you think, or back then that you thought, I won't go and work for a big hotel group or a big recruitment agency and sort of maybe change it slowly. I'm going to back myself into this. I can do it better than the way perhaps I've been treated and I see other people treated, where they sort of have to go chasing their money, their pay. It's not extra money. It's not a bonus. It's their pay.
They're
right. And they have to go chasing it. What in you made you think that I should back myself?
I just have always believed in myself. I don't know how else to explain it. I make a decision and I stick to it and I keep going. I never look back, and I never doubt. I wouldn't say never doubt, because sometimes you do doubt yourself, but I knew it was the right thing to do. I just knew it and I got on and did it.
So you'd begun in the hospitality game sort of out of necessity. You had this new baby. The name was interesting, because I wondered if it was, you know, a family name or, but I understand what you're saying now. So you completely started it from scratch.
With no financial backing at all. And that was an interesting thing in itself, you know, because back in that, well, you can imagine what kind of a risk I was.
Oh.
I look back and wonder now how the hell I got through that. But because you don't stop to think about it at the time because you're just getting on and making ends meet. There's a baby. You've got to find money. You've got to make it all happen and on you go. It's just.
Let's talk about funding.
So
yes.
Let's talk about the bank. No one would ever. You have to have permission in those days. You needed to have a man sign. I mean.
I know that's not that long
it's
ago,
not that long
really,
ago.
Is it? Mid-80s. I suppose it is nearly 40
true.
Years ago, but
yeah.
Gosh.
Terrible. So what happened was
So you're supposed to have a husband
supposed
or
to have a
father.
Father who's backing you, which I didn't have either. By the time Stephen and David had gone, I had another partner come into the business with me, Clifford, and we were in business for about 10 years until that partnership finished. And so we worked on it together, and Clifford was very we were a good combination for a long time. But, you know, he was like me. He didn't really have any cash, but he didn't have a baby attached to him. So it made it a little bit easier. We had a good client list.
Yes, or stick with the funding for me.
Yeah.
So did you go together to banks and get bank money? Did you max out the credit cards? Did you say you
perhaps we went
didn't
to the
have
bank
the bank of mum and dad?
No, I didn't have a bank of mum and dad. We managed to get a bank overdraft. I think it was for $30,000. Don't know how we managed to do that.
Quite substantial, I think, back in those days.
And that was enough to get us started, but it was really tough getting it. And it was hard. It was really hard. But you know, we just battled on through it.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, both of us had a great work ethic. And, you know, so we kept on going.
So did you ever, so I guess what you were also seeing was this need out there in the community that firstly the workers needed to be sort of in a way better organised to be able to get properly recompensed and so that they didn't have to go chasing and that maybe the whole arrangements for wait staff and servers was way too haphazard. And
absolutely.
That you could put some order and some conformity, I guess, in a way to it.
Well, put some training in, some uniforms, you know, have a system.
Did you have that idea from the very beginning?
Yep.
I'm going to train these people too?
Yep, I did, because when I started working over here, that was one of the first things I noticed. I thought people need to get a uniform.
Yeah.
they need to look halfway decent,
right.
You know, because I think that was all very slack. And I went, no, I think there's a real market for this. And the other partners were the same. We took pride in how we looked.
Mm-hmm.
We took pride in how we presented ourselves. We took pride in our work. And so we employed like-minded people. And it worked very well. We got some great clients. And
how did you get those clients at first? And can you remember the very first client? Whether it was a person or a corporate
or a
charity?
There were a couple of caterers. Perry Snodgrass Catering, going back many years. She's a beautiful woman. And I used to work for her through the other agency that I was with, and she employed me. And then Premier Crew, there was a couple of caterers. And then
that's interesting, right.
And then there was another, and it was through the caterers. And then I don't know if you remember a woman called Norma Willis from Just New Catering.
Oh, yes, I do
and
remember
so Norma
that name.
Became a client. And they were all the really top caterers around town.
Yeah.
And so they started using our services. And then I was lucky enough because I had been sent to the Premier's department and I'd forged some relationships in there. So we got the contract for the Premier's department, which was very good. And
But I mean, you say that and you jump over what would have been. Now, how am I going to convince these people that little old me and my band of wait staff behind me, and you obviously had some jobs by then, can service, you know, the top politician in the state and all his guests when they come in, et cetera, et cetera. How did you work out that game plan?
Well,
to try and win them over?
We knew enough people between us, and so we started employing people, and we offered really good wages. We paid above odds.
Okay.
In those days you could. There was room for it. You can't
right.
now. You have to adhere to awards because clients won't pay for that.
Oh,
so
okay.
So we did that. You know, we sacrificed profit.
Yes, in the early days. You mean to get some good weight staff.
Really good weight staff.
I'm calling them that, but is there any other word that you use?
No, they're weight staff.
Servers and weight staff,
Yeah, absolutely. And kitchen staff. And just people that love working in our industry, you know, whether it was from restaurants or, you know, events or, you know, then they wanted, and some of them wanted to get out of restaurants again and start doing a corporate boardroom.
Yeah.
That was quite popular because, you know, we'd know.
The hours would be better, I imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, Sydney did a lot of entertaining. It was, you know, and it still does. I mean,
Well, certainly the 80s or by the late 80s and some of the 90s, it was very much spend and corporates and luxury brands and all those sort of people were. And when did fringe benefits tax come in? That was the mid-80s, wasn't it?
That was right at the time when I started Spendments, and that's how it all converged at the right time. You know, you have a good idea and sometimes they're great good ideas and then there's killer ideas because you're at the right time at the right place.
Okay. So,
and I was at the right time at the right place.
Yeah. And why do you say that?
Because of all those things that converged. There was no competition that was doing what I was doing. Fringe benefit taxes were brought in place, so all the corporate boardrooms went off. I had the contacts with the caterers.
Right.
I then got the premier's department.
Yeah.
We'd systematized the staff so everyone had a uniform. We were training them. You know, it came together. It just was good.
So was your first move to say, well, I and my partners, we can at least work places? Or was it to gather a little team of good weight staff? Or was it to set up an office and have a little letterhead? Because, of course, there's no internet, there's no smartphones, there's no Instagram to self-promote in those days.
No, there was none of that. And we all worked. We worked really hard. So we worked the office and then go out and
during
jobs,
the day,
and then go out at night, work events, and whatever you would cobble it together, I think is the best way of describing it. And yes, there was a diary, which was paper, and there was a pencil with an eraser, and that you'd take your bookings. It was a telephone,
no mobiles,
a telephone.
Just one,
and people would ring
landline,
with an answer phone attached to it if no one was there.
And all your staff would be listed in,
in a teledex. So you have all of that, and then you'd have, you know, we used to the Kalamazoo payroll. All of that, all manual, nothing computerized, and so that's how. And we did work very hard. And of course, I had my daughter who was young, so that was tough.
So were you really juggling
work from home to begin with, and then we took an office. Our first office was in the Edgecliffe Centre. It was just two rooms
in Eastern Sydney.
Jamie went to daycare.
Right.
That was it.
So how did you sort of scale up? Was it all word of mouth to get new clients?
Yeah.
Right. And in that industry, I guess in your industry, it's probably still dependent really on word of mouth.
It is, yeah. You know, and you know, you make friends along the way. You know, all the head chefs, I know Neil really well, I know Matt really well. You know, I'm the same age as them.
Yeah.
So they grew their empires.
Right.
I wouldn't call it an empire in comparison, but I kept going, and so I have had great contacts along the way, and people have been very supportive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So somebody like those restaurateurs, Matt Moran and Neil Perry, you mentioned, they would have their own staff.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't they? Do you mean for bigger events that they might be chefing for?
Well, then when Matt went down and Solitel got the Opera House, we were the people that looked after the staff for that to begin with.
Oh, wow.
You know, when Neil was in the MCA, we did the staff. You know, there's been lots of incarnations for all of us.
Yes.
And we've all kind of worked at different things at different times.
Yeah. Once you started to really get traction, were you tempted to think, oh, this is pretty easy. I've still probably got no good competition at our level. This is easy building up this business. Or was it just always a hard slog?
Well, there's been moments when I've kind of felt that this is easy. And then as soon as you think that, then you get knocked off your perch. And I think that's a really good thing to remember when you're building a business, is that the climb up is pretty hard.
Yeah.
And the slide down happens pretty quickly.
Well, the fall, that's right, can happen really quickly. Yeah. We'll get to some of those in a minute. But you've said you also started training personnel. Yeah. Why did you think that was so important? And how important a part of the business is it today?
Oh, it's very important. It did see me lose my partnership with Clifford.
Oh, really?
And that was that.
Can you explain what happened there?
Oh, it was 1980. You know, the Olympics got announced. We were in Sydney, so we were, you know, very well placed for all of that, and so we both decided that we'd. By then, we were in the city in Clarence Street. We'd gone from Edgecliff to Rushcutters Bay.
Right.
From Rushcutters Bay, we went to Clarence Street. And I remember when we did, because we did the big announcement when, you know, Sydney won the, I remember doing that event. It was just amazing.
Oh, wow. So you handled that event announcement.
Yeah. And so that was down at the Fleet Steps and at Botanic Gardens. And it was just, we were euphoric. I will never forget it. It was just the most amazing feeling. You know, just to think, oh, wow, and then you think, right, okay, game on.
Yeah, now we actually have to make it work.
So we moved down. We took a very big office space and to put a training centre in down at the Rocks. Unfortunately, what happened was Clifford got cold feet.
About what, having to invest in the in the training, yeah. Mm.
And so we started not to get on. Mm. That's a horrible thing to have happen. And we then couldn't talk to each other.
Oh, wow.
And then it became a standoff of, well, you know, I want the business. Oh, I want the business.
Oh.
And I'm pretty stubborn. And, you know, sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not. Anyway, I am. I'm just a stubborn. I started the business and it was mine. And I just said to him, I don't see your name in this, Stedman's. So I stuck to my guns. Unfortunately, I was young and foolhardy.
Yeah.
And so we finally settled and I bought him out and there was no non-compete clause, which was a very stupid thing to do. And I gathered a bunch of investors and unfortunately Clifford left. And because I was the nuts and bolts of the business, I'm the logistical person, if that makes sense. I did a lot, you know, all the planning and
operations,
all that. And he was front of house. So that's, you can understand what happened there. So that was silly of me. And so that, unfortunately, because we'd taken out quite a lot of money to fit out the building. So I took on all that debt and unfortunately it didn't work out. So we had to, that business folded. And then I started from scratch again. So
the training side of the business folded.
The whole business folded.
The whole business folded.
So I've done that. I've been there at that cold face and it's not pleasant and it's very confronting.
Mm.
But one thing I will say about it is if you can work your way through it, it will make you very strong and very able to deal with adversity because that's what you have to do. You have to pick yourself up. You really have to look yourself in the mirror and work out what you're going to do and do you have the courage to go on? And that's what I did and I managed to do that.
Okay.
So I started again.
All right. So you didn't think at that point, oh, look, I'm a fool. Why did I let that, you know, non-compete go? Maybe I'm not cut out for this. I'll just walk away and I'll go and work for someone.
No, I felt really duped. And I felt it was really, it wasn't very nice at all. It was a horrible feeling. But, you know, when you have a business that goes bad, there's a sense of shame, obviously, and that's tough to get through. And it was one of those things, you know, you kind of have to have reasons. You know, you have those internal dialogues with yourself. You have to have reasons for doing things. And I went, okay. Didn't do very well at that. How am I going to change this? Okay, what I'm going to do is if I am able to get this business up and running again, I am going to make sure that I give back to the community 100% all the time, as much as I possibly can. And if I can do that, if this business goes, that's what I'm going to do. And it gave me an impetus because I was building something not just for me. I was building something for other people.
Yeah.
Because I went, no, because I know that I can actually help others. And that's kind of how I got it going again.
Wow. So, again, you had to start from scratch. This would have been Before the Olympics?
Yes, just before the Olympics. Yeah. So that would be about 96.
So building up both the staffing recruitment side, but also the training side?
Yes, and I always had always training. Training is in my heart.
Yeah.
It's a tough one because it's hard to make, you don't make an income out of it unless you're going to go into a registered training organisation. Right. But that's not.
And you never did that?
I did once and looked at it, nearly went there, but it's all about the black book and what has to be done by that. And it's not really what we,
It's not your core business, is it?
So what we do is we train people to get employment. We want people to be able to earn a living.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. We give people skills to have a job. And that's not necessarily government. That's a different training.
This whole change or building out of the ashes, you know, like a phoenix rising again, you managed to do it. How do you think?
Through determination, but I had I met my future husband and he was very helpful at that time and he believed in me and so I set about building a business again and that was helpful. We weren't married then, we were dating and he, you know, he said, no, you can do this. Come on, get yourself together. Come on, let's go. And we, you know, he didn't help with any of the work.
Was he a financial partner?
He had some money. He spent it, I think it was probably the best $30,000 he ever invested.
Yeah.
And so he helped me get started again.
Yes.
And but he never worked, but for moral support. And
right.
Then we went on, we were married and we have a son together.
Right.
Unfortunately, that marriage didn't last. But I have a beautiful son from it.
Oh, that's good.
And there you go, you know, and life goes on. Yeah. But I did manage to rebuild the business. Yeah.
Amazing, Mandy. And you did that by yourself. I mean, you say moral support, but he never worked in it with you.
No, they were because I had been business had been shut down, I couldn't be a shareholder. So he was a shareholder with two others. And
sorry, you say because the business had been shut down.
Well, if you go into liquidation, you can't be director.
Yeah,
you know, so I had to go through all the that.
Which there would have been an enormous amount of angst and shame and all those things.
But you know, I think all entrepreneurs, I think pretty much they've all been close to there, if not been there. So I think that's
a
part
lot
of,
have been there.
Exactly. It's part of being an entrepreneur.
Don't
you have
admit
to be prepared.
It.
You've got to be prepared. To know that you can go, you know, that's part of the risk.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't want to go there. And I certainly haven't gone there ever again.
Yes.
But it was, you know, it was a big lesson.
Yeah. So non-compete clauses are now your number one up on there on the pedestal.
Yeah.
So was there a time then after then where you felt I have some financial freedom now. The business is stable financially, is viable financially.
That's a really interesting question.
This is before we come to COVID, but sort of still early
2000s. I'd say, look, you know, the business was making very good money.
Did you go into debt? Like,
no,
have you always funded things with debt
so
cash flow?
Cash flow. I don't owe the bank a cent. Oh,
that's a nice position to be
well,
in.
Well, it's, you know, it has its ups and its downs.
Yeah, of course.
But it's kind of, that's part of how I, you know, it's very important to all of that stuff, really. You know, you can get to a point where you know not to do that.
Yeah.
If you can. You know, that's part of the journey.
Do you think there was one crucial step, and we haven't gone through the history yet of this the 21st century yet, but was there one crucial step or one big step that really catapulted Steadman's to strong growth? I mean, was it the Sydney Olympics or?
I think the Olympics were groundbreaking for the whole of the hospitality industry, and I think we really grew up enormously.
How did it impact your business?
Well, it just, everything came to Sydney. Sydney was the buzzword, you know, everyone came here to holiday. Everyone wanted to live here. You know, business was abundant and events.
Yes.
You know, all the overseas groups would come to town. So all the event organisers started to appear, you know, because they didn't really exist. You know, the, like, I don't know who would remember all these people, you know, but you know, David Grant,
yes.
Ignatius Jones is right. Unfortunately just passed yes. away. But you know, it's that era of, you know, everything started to really come to life. Rick's who did what's his surname? I'll think of it in a minute. Who did the Olympic opening ceremony.
Yeah.
You know, Rick Birch, you know, everyone started to kind of, it was the Olympics that brought that to town.
Yes, yeah. No doubt and they all it. Need to be fed and watered and yeah. go to smart events and yeah. fun events.
And then they'd bring in all the American, you know, corporates would bring all their people down under.
Yeah.
and
yeah.
we'd all get to look after all those big groups of people. And money was never an object.
Oh, right.
So I guess that's
so that
really,
was a good heyday for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And was that the point at which you felt, oh, we're pretty financially viable now or more than financially viable?
I don't think I've ever really felt secure, though. Interesting that. I never thought about it. But I was always – that concerns me. I think that goes back to having lost everything. So I'm always very cautious with that feeling, oh, no, everything's fine.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got loads of dough or the business is making loads of dough. You, what you're saying, you keep that mindset of maybe I could lose the next dollar.
And I think then COVID was the proof of that. Yeah. you know, so I think that – I remember I have some great friends and one of my friends who's in PR, she said, you know, Mandy, great thing for you is that, you know, everyone would always need to keep entertaining and your business will always be safe. And hell, then COVID happened. Mm. and she said, you would never have expected that.
Yeah.
So that was a big shock.
Yeah. So what did happen in COVID? Did you have to completely shut down?
Yep. We were pretty much the first people to get shut down, I'd say. And we had to shut everything down. And
did you have to get rid of staff or how did you navigate through it?
No, we got some JobKeeper and because I have long-term employees. Some people work casually for me, but they've been with me for years. You know, we have a really good culture. And what happened was we did get some JobKeeper and I had all my office staff, which I kept. And I paid them above what the JobKeeper was.
Right.
I invested in the future. Always looking ahead.
Yeah.
and then there were people that didn't get looked after. So we also found money for them. I kind of decided to do that and, you know, really tried
hard. So many had to let some go?
Some did. Some did have to drift. But, you know, well, there was no work, but, you know, you can't. And then with the people that were on JobKeeper, what I said to them, I said, look, this is not, you don't have to do this, but I think it's really nice if you can do something back for people. So we got very involved in all the charities. So we helped Neil with his food. We'd send volunteers down to help with that. We helped Matthew Talbot with all the food runs. You know, I got everybody doing stuff because the other thing I really realized is that we're social beasts. And whilst we all had to isolate, you know, you need to have a sense of purpose. And if you're just sitting at home collecting money, well, how does that work?
Mm.
you know, so no one worked 40 hours, but, you know, even if they did 8 hours a week, at least it gave them something to do.
And some purpose.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you managed through COVID.
Yep.
And you came out the other side and just, kept going?
Yep, kept going. So we got through all the ups and downs of COVID because it was a minefield.
How did you sort of manage to? Cut them or?
Absolutely, we did. We had a large office which we got rid of, and we all worked from home. You know which was helpful. And then what happened was when it started to open up again, we actually found a great space in Edgecliffe, and it's a redevelopment site, so we were allowed to go in there for a very reasonable rent, and that helped us with a good training room, great training room.
Yeah.
And so we started back again because we had to restaff again. You know, we had a skeleton staff.
Yeah.
And because we did, you know, there were some contracts we had that continued on, like the concierge work kept on. There were a few corporates that had staff coming from us right through COVID. You know, there was
so that kept you going a bit.
Yeah, it did. So there's enough to keep people to something to do. We weren't just sitting at home doing nothing. I mean, the first few months was frightening.
Oh, I bet.
Trying to work out what to do. You know,
when everyone was sort of panicked and in business, nobody knew when it was going to finish or whether it would finish.
I remember that time. I was so grateful because I had two great things. I had a really good financial advisor. Actually, three great things. Four. Great staff, I loved. A really good financial advisor who I trusted implicitly, and he was so helpful. a very good lawyer. And then I also had just recently finished the settlement of my divorce with my husband. So I had an amount of cash. It wasn't huge, but enough so I could actually start.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what was important.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of you work out what where it all sits.
Yeah. But I mean, restaffing after COVID must have been tricky because the whole country was
restaffing.
There's no staff. There's no you know, not enough employees, we were told for a year or more that, you know, we needed more staff.
Well, everybody worked very hard. We all went back out. So all the people in the office were out working events. I was working events, driving staff.
Wow.
In my car down to Southern Highlands because all everyone wanted to get married and there was weddings everywhere.
Yes.
There was no venues, so everything. It was like I'd start work at 6 in the morning, get in my car at 10 o'clock, fill it up with staff, drive to the Southern Highlands, work an event through till 1 in the morning, drive home. You know, like it was really, you know, it was cold face.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But we all had to do it.
Crazy.
Because also we wanted to be able to help people to get out again, you know, and that was really important. People needed a job. And I guess the frustrating thing was that we had to turn away so much work.
Yeah.
Because you can't do everything. And then we also needed to reconnect.
Yes.
And then watching people reconnect was really beautiful. I loved it.
You've been involved in many charities, actually giving of your time yourself, but you've also then, as a work thing, from what I can gather, you have worked at a huge number. You know, you staff a lot of big charity events, but you've been involved in the arts and charities for a long time. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I guess it was that point when I was rebuilding the business and that when I decided to give back to the community. It was pretty easy because people ring me all the time asking for help. And, you know, and so you work out what it is that you like to help and who, you know, who do you feel is a priority. And those priorities change. And so, you know, at that time I had my young son, Declan. I had my daughter, Jamie. And so the children's hospital became very special. And so I got involved with this children's hospital and
in Sydney, in Randwick,
and it was they came up with this great idea, the Gold Dinner, and so I was involved from the very first. Stedman's did the staffing for the first Gold Dinner, and we've done every Gold Dinner. There's 27. We just had the last one.
27 gold dinners that you've been involved in.
Worked a lot of them. Sat at a few, co-chaired for a moment. I was sitting on the committee. So I kind of get very involved in things. Once I get my head into it, I do get involved. But so we've done a lot of work with the Children's Hospital over the years. And that's, you know, it's been good for business, but, you know, but at the same time we've given a lot back.
Yeah.
And so that's part of it for me. You know, I love the zoo, so I got involved with Taronga Zoo and helped them. With the Zufari.
Right.
Was wonderful raising money there. And, you know, like there's just endless
things. So it's part work.
Part work.
And part because you want to,
you know, I want to
get
do
involved
that.
And also, give your time and expertise.
Yeah, and I also felt that it was important. So I'd get the staff, you know, pre-COVID, and not post-COVID, but pre-COVID, we'd get the staff to donate some of their time or all their time. So they understood too that, you know, philanthropy and giving back is a really important part of society and that we all need to know that there are always people worse off than us and we have a duty to help. And I think that's incredibly important for people.
So that's a very big driving force for you?
Very big driving force. And I like to try and teach people about that too.
Where do you think that's come from?
I have no idea.
Did you have a difficult family life?
I guess I probably did.
Yeah. As a child or just the...
I came from a family of five. My mother was very unwell, I think mentally unwell, and I was the middle child and I was very capable and brought up my younger brothers and left home very young because of, you know, my parents' divorce. So, you know, I think maybe that's probably part of it, yeah.
Yeah. Were your, just sort of more on the entrepreneurial side, were your folks in business or where did this entrepreneurial streak in you come from, do you think?
No, my father was a photographer, but he was actually a great salesman and I think I learnt that from him, you are. So that's where it came from, yes.
Yeah. And is there an exit strategy for you, or do you want to keep going in this business? Do you want to still do more things in it? You've already achieved so much.
Look, I don't want to stop working. I will take my foot off it slightly at some point. I have now taken on a fantastic partner and sold a little bit of the business to her, Nina, and there's other employee, and who's an employee. And I think employees, we look to our, the people that are working with us to look to see who would like to come into the business. Because this is my heart's soul. Yeah. It's my other child.
Yeah.
And I am so passionate about my business and what it can achieve and what we can do to help other people. So it needs longevity.
Yeah.
So yes, longevity is important. Will I work as hard as I am at the moment? Hopefully at some point I won't have to, but in the end I thrive on it. My children have grown up now.
Yes.
So I have plenty of time.
Are either of them interested?
No. One has a catering business and she does that. We cross over from time to time.
Yeah.
And the other one is a landscape gardener back at uni doing landscape architecture.
Okay.
Landscape architecture.
Yeah.
So he got that from COVID.
Right.
So he came to live with me because I'm a great gardener.
Yes.
And so I feel very satisfied. I have two great loves, cooking and gardening.
Oh,
I've
got
one of my children in each of them. So, hey,
oh, that's gorgeous.
Very satisfied.
Yeah, very happy indeed.
Yeah.
The challenges, we've talked about a number of them, but I think it's really important for would-be entrepreneurs who might be listening to this to really understand it is not smooth sailing the whole time. Yes, the highs are probably very high. The challenges, I mean, you've obviously been able to overcome many of them, and that's why you've stayed.
I think, challenges are interesting because I see them as opportunities in some ways, and I think that's how you have to think about them, because it can defeat you if you otherwise. And so what you have to do is when you have challenges and things that you're not sure about, you have, good to seek, get great advice. Over the years I've had some bad advice and, I've learnt now, you've got to be careful who you trust and where you believe. But then once you have to be very, very definite with your ideas and you need to make decisions. You have to be prepared to make the hard decisions. That's what I'm trying to say, Helen.
Yeah.
And once you make the hard decisions, you need to stick by them. Otherwise, there's no point in going there because that's really hard.
Yeah.
And you've got to, be prepared to know that it's not going to be plain sailing. Be able to pick yourself up, dust yourself off and
start all over again.
Exactly right.
But your business is essentially based on human capital. And, you can't just invest in a great new piece of technology.
I wish.
or a machine to, dramatically boost your business. And humans are fabulous and we're really pleased that you're still giving jobs to humans.
Yeah.
But, they can have bad days, off days. Are there a lot of challenges with staff, particularly
there
some
are.
Who might be more casual? And
there are, and we have to have a
as
great
in casually employed. I mean,
we have to be really understanding of people and what they're going through in life, and that's why we try and keep our staff connected with us. And I spend, I have great staff around me, and we constantly reach out and check in on staff. We make sure, and when things go, there's things like, when there's something happens and a staff member's had a bad experience, I always talk to them and I always make sure I counsel them, and we have counselling available to people, very important, because that's really what's important is making sure we look after people's mental health.
Right.
If something goes wrong, as I say to them, it might not be now, you might feel okay at the moment, but it might be in a month's time, you go, hold on, that really rattled me what happened.
Mm.
Can I come and talk? And then we get counselling in and we sort those things out. Very important.
Yeah. Well, as well as the human capital, you also have to deal with at big events and certainly outside events, inclement weather, storms, tempests, traffic, all
collapsing
sorts of things.
Floors, collapsing marquees.
What are some of the worst things you've had happen to you?
Well, I remember there was a floor that collapsed on some event. That was interesting. And you've got to keep calm. You see, that's the main thing. You can never be flapped. No one runs. And you have to be absolutely
So you're screaming in to yourself, but not showing anything.
No, I'm a very calm person.
You are, yeah. And, well, that's good.
And then because that then calms everybody down, and that's your job, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And you've got to give direction. You need to be concise and decisive and calm.
So what are some of the worst things where you've had to be calm, decisive, and either, you know, people, I mean, I don't know.
Well, you can have people. Well, sometimes, you know, we have guests that may have had a little bit too much to drink.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you know, and that can be quite disastrous.
Yeah.
And
of
so,
course.
You know,
fights or sickness or.
Well, you've got to be very careful about how you deal with it. You know, because there's a lovely way of actually manoeuvring people out of an event
right.
or out of somewhere without them being embarrassed, without causing a fuss.
Yeah.
And it's good to teach people how to do that.
Yes.
And I can't really talk specifically about things, obviously, but, you know, there's things like that. You
ever
know.
A tent collapse at the gold dinner?
No, we had a lot of leakings. and you know, gold dinners are hilarious because gold dinner always rains. I don't think it's ever been.
Really?
I can't think of one dry gold dinner.
And you always have it outside in some.
This year wasn't.
Makeshift.
Yeah, usually isn't a makeshift, you know, lean-to.
Venue, yeah. Very glamorously decorated,
you know,
of course.
And then, of course, you know, then you'll find things like, you know, hire equipment hasn't turned up because the hire company forgot or you know, your staff are missing.
Yeah.
You've got to deal with that and work out what you're going to do. Or, you know, the other thing to watch is, you know, I've had things where, oh, gosh, that's right. The caterer was not very experienced. It was a big sit-down. And they ran out of portions. That's always an interesting one.
What did you do? Did you have to go and order it down at some restaurant?
Really? Yeah. So you kind of, there's all sorts of things that go on and you have to work it out.
Yeah. So were you always on hand? You can't be at every single event every night of the week.
No.
But you've got good staff.
I've got the most magnificent staff. I really do. And over the years, you know, some of them have come and gone, but I still think fondly back on the people that have worked. I've, you know, had thousands and thousands of people work for me. And I think very fondly. And some people obviously, you know, really stick in your mind. And it's lovely, you know. And you need to give people opportunities because you can't just run everything yourself.
Yeah. But when you started, maybe not the very first iteration, but did you have big goals, a big vision for Stedman's?
Well, I only wanted Stedman's to be in Sydney because of my children. So that's an interesting one. So I wanted to be top of the, you know.
Top of the tree.
Here.
The most professional, the most highly respected.
Yep, that was me. And then, you know, to grow the business and the way the things are because, you know, a lot of things are on national need now, you know, national supply chains. And,
mm-hmm.
and also I need to think about the, you know, the staff that I have now and think about their future. So that's why we moved into Melbourne and into Queensland. So that, you know, it gives them some longevity and I'd like to plan ahead to make sure of that. And also people, you know, people travel a lot more so they'll move between states so people will move around within the three states and I think that's a really good opportunity for people.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, thinking of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your markers of success now? Is it, I mean, probably money in the bank or money in the till is one of them, but how big is the business? How many full-time employees, casual employees, or what are your markers of success?
Happy staff. That's a major marker. Longevity of staff with me. That's a really big important thing. I've got people that have been with me for 25 years. So that's really important.
Wow, that's a fantastic testimony to you, Mandy.
Well, I just think I think that we need to be kind to people. So, you know, if I can be kind to them, it's really good, you know, because I think that word's not used enough. But that's a really important one. I think that, you know, it's really important for us to do the marquee events. That's really important to have the best clients. You know, we don't get everything. It's been possible to, you know, it's a dream, but we keep striving for it. Currently carrying about 750 casuals across the three states. My head office has a team of 12. Queensland's two, Victoria's two full-timers, but we don't because mostly gets run out of Sydney. And then we have full-time, so we have a lot of concierge staff we employ full-time. And then I also sponsor special people that I really care about that I believe would be a great asset to Australia. I do sponsor
who
a number of
brought
people.
Brought in from overseas.
Well, no, they, or who, well, they've come to work for us, yeah, and who are eligible to be sponsored.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm very careful about it. I've sponsored a lot of people over the years. It's not always plain sailing.
Yeah.
But I care very, there's people I care very much about,
yeah,
that have come from countries and they need to be given another chance or given a better chance. And I'm very, very conscious of that. So all those things are markers for me, yeah, whether I can do all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you taken on any investors or other shareholders?
Oh, well, I've got one shareholder.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nina.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Your new partner, but maybe not equal partners.
No, yet. She's come in and it's great. And I love having her there. She brings such great energy. She's, good, bit younger than me. And yes. I love the energy. And our office is very dynamic.
Oh, that's...
And never 2 days are the same. And our team works so closely together. We all feed off each other.
Yes.
You know, John, who really is my main man in the office, he's just amazing. And he's been with me since he was left school.
Oh.
So he went off traveling and went to university. Mm. So that's the sort of culture that we'd like, that's important to me.
Mm. Yeah. Do you feel you have a secret sauce to your success in this business?
I think I just have an ability to keep going. I pick myself up and I'm very good at that. And I think that's a secret sauce. I have that tenacity. Yeah.
What's been the biggest challenge for you along the way?
COVID was pretty testing for all of us. I think that was the biggest challenge, really. There's been others, but that really was the biggest challenge of keeping going through that. It was hard work. It was sleepless nights. It was, feeling ill, just worried for people, worried for everybody. Mm.
I ask all my guests this. Just a few final questions. What are you obsessed about at the moment, be it a cause, a child, a book, a film, a recipe?
I'm absolutely jam making.
Obsessed with jam making. When on earth do you get time to make jam?
I am not good at sitting still. I don't have an off button.
Yeah.
And my children are always giving me a hard time about it. But I love making jam because it's really good thinking time. And I love that. And I should have bought you some. But I love giving people jam. I find it such a beautiful thing to do. So there you go.
It's a gorgeous gift. Great. What's the biggest lesson you think you've learned on your journey? Your business journey?
I think over the years I've become more patient and I listen and I like to let things settle inside of me when I'm trying to make a decision rather than rushing at it. I'll let it settle and then it'll come to the top and then I'll know I've made the right decision and then I'll continue on. I think that's a really good lesson when you're younger. I think you're a bit brash and you make some silly mistakes.
If you were starting your entrepreneurial journey again, what's one thing you would tell yourself?
Stop, think, listen.
What would you say to other, probably young people who think, I've got a great idea, I'm going to back myself and do a business and be entrepreneurial about it?
Just remember, you never really truly do anything by yourself and you need to be kind to everybody around you because they're the people that actually will help you up when you actually, particularly if things are not going well, you've got people around you, they'll bolster you and again help you continue on, and I think you need to be kind.
Mandy Foley, the founder and managing director of Stedman's Hospitality Services. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been great speaking to you on Build It, They'll Come.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed Build It, They'll Come. Let me know via Twitter and LinkedIn. Better still, let your family, friends and colleagues know by sharing it around your networks. And I'd love you to give it a star rating on Apple Podcasts to make it easier for others to find us. Be sure to subscribe as there are plenty of upcoming episodes you don't want to miss with more amazing innovators and entrepreneurs on how they turn their light bulb idea into an empire.